Now, just talking a little bit more generally about the 10 destructive actions. So any of the 10 can be initiated with any of the 3 poisons. You know, I mean, I suppose you could covet somebody's possessions out of anger. You may start out, you know, out of anger, but the thing is, whenever you complete it, it's completed with attachment. And so, although you may start out with one motivation for any of these 10, that's called the causal motivation. The timely motivation, which is the motivation you have at the time you're actually doing it, okay? So to complete killing and harsh words and malice, they're always completed. The motivation at the time is anger, okay? And similarly, stealing and unwise sexual behavior and coveting, it may start out with other disturbing attitudes, but the timely motivation that we have when we complete it is attachment. Okay? And with ignorance, I mean with the wrong views, it's ignorance that we complete it with. And with the other ones, lying and divisive words and idle chatter, then those are things that can be completed with any of the disturbing attitudes. Okay? And then, like I said before, all of the 7 of the body and speech, 6 you can do by telling others to do, and the 1 unwise sexual behavior you have to do yourself. And the 3 of the mind can't exist in your mind at one time. They're in different mind moments, because you can't have attachment, anger, and ignorance manifest in the mind at the same time. Okay? So you may go from coveting and then to maliciousness and then to wrong views and back and forth, but they're never all there at one time mentally. And in the case of the strength of the actions, okay, actually, they say wrong views is the worst because it sets the stage for doing the other 9. But beside that one, killing would be the most harmful. And of the 3 of body, you know, it's killing that's the most harmful, then stealing, and then unwise sexual behavior. And for the 4 of speech, again, it goes in the order that they're listed, the lying, divisive words, harsh words, and idle talk. And then for the 3 of mind, it goes in the reverse order. In other words, the most harmful is the wrong views, then the malice, and then the coveting. Okay? So that's finishing up about the 10. Let me pause here and see if you have any questions about what we've gone through tonight. Yeah?
Because what you said on this is the basis
object. Oh, okay. Okay. The 4 main points are the basis of the object, then the complete intention, then the action, and then the completion of the action. Now, if you go back to the 2nd one, the complete intention, that's subdivided into 3 things. Okay. First is recognizing the object so that you have the thing or the person or whatever that you're intending to act upon. Then the 2nd is actually intending to do whatever that action is. And the 3rd part of that is the disturbing attitude that motivates it. Okay? Sometimes in other situations, you may hear them talk about the 3 parts of a complete negative karma, in which case how they're dividing it is the preparation, the actual, and the completion. So if you ever hear the 3 parts, don't get confused, because it's actually the 4 parts, but you're looking at it in a different way, because the 1st and 2nd are put it together into 1. Okay, so included in the preparation, which is the 1st 3 parts, would be the 1st 2 of the 4 parts, the basis and then the complete intention. Okay. And like I said before, it's really helpful knowing all these, because then it gives us the ability to look at our own actions and to, you know, kind of put them in a perspective. And so to tell, well, when have I done a complete A number 1 perfect negative action, and when have I only done part of it, in which case it's not as heavy. Yeah. And then also that helps us in the future so that, you know, because we're not going to all of a sudden, you know, completely change and abandon all of our negative actions right away. It'd be nice, but things just don't work that way. But at least, you know, knowing that these four parts, we can, by knowing them, then at least make an effort not to complete all four when we act harmfully.
Is coveting one desire being accepted?
Yeah. It's along the same line as desire. But here we're talking about the kind of desire that is the clinging, grasping, possessive desire. Okay? And so coveting is that kind of desire, just really, I'm definitely going to get that. Yeah. It's like, you know, it's like first class desire. Yeah. Yeah, ignorance is an unknowing or an unawareness in the mind. And within this unawareness, then we misconstrue how ourselves and other people and other phenomena exist. Okay? So ignorance, they give the analogy like walking into a dark room. Okay, the darkness is the obscuration. So there's obscuration in our mind. But there's not just obscuration, there is an active misinterpretation. So that would be like going into the dark room and you see something in the corner that's coiled and striped. And you go, ah, it's a snake. Yeah? And it's a rope. But because of the darkness, you project something that's not there on that basis, and then get all afraid and start yelling and screaming and, you know, things like that. Okay? So the same thing with the ignorance in the mind. There's this foggy obscuration, and then on top of that, we project what we call inherent or independent existence onto phenomena. Okay? So we make them solid and concrete and existent in and of themselves. So that's the principal ignorance. There's also another secondary kind of ignorance that is ignorance of cause and effect. Okay, ignorance of kind of how things function on a relative level. You know, like ignorance that if you kill, it affects what happens to you later. Maybe what you have there is the basis, and you have the complete intention, but you don't have the action and the completion. Because it's just this thought of, oh gee, I'd like to go and buy a new pair of skis. Okay? But you're not kind of really mulling it over and thinking about it. So it's not a complete thing, but because we are again bringing attachment into a manifest state in our mind, it's creating more habits for attachment. Yeah. So the more we bring it manifestly into our mind, then the more it's going to keep coming.
Just a regular desire, more desire.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. And I think, you know, we probably have like a lot of desire and stuff regularly during the day, but we just happen to notice it when we're sitting and, you know, watching the breath. But then I think also you're right that sometimes the desire even seems to increase because we're putting ourselves in an environment where we're not allowing our desire to run rampant. Yeah? So sometimes it's like, you know, if you let the dog run wherever it goes, it doesn't make a fuss, but as soon as you put him in a yard, he starts yelling and screaming and all of a sudden, you know, making a big fuss. And so I think that's what our baby mind does. Yeah, it yells and screams because we're putting ourselves in an environment where we can't just go and fulfill our every wish every time it pops into our mind. Yeah.
Mind can create separation and create.
Yeah, the ignorance is the mind that makes everything very fixed and solid and real and existent in and of itself. It's like saying, I am a horrible person. That's all I am. This is it. there's a me, there's a very definite me that's there, and its nature is completely horrible. Yeah, making that completely solid without any space in the mind at all, when in fact, you know, there's no solid concrete person there to start with that you can label as saying this is completely a catastrophe. Yeah? But we're kind of creating something where there's nothing. Yeah? Or you look at money, and money is paper and ink, but you superimpose on top of this, money! You know, I've got to have it! Yeah, and making it real solid that it isn't just paper and ink anymore. This is real, inherent, existing stuff that's very, very valuable. And all my self-respect depends upon it. Okay? So making everything very concrete, existing in and of itself, instead of seeing that things are made of parts, that things arise and they fade away because of causes.
So I have that.
Okay, this is not an ignorance of not knowing. This is an ignorance of a misconception that is innate, that we are born with. You know, this ignorance that makes everything solid and concrete. Nobody teaches us. Okay, this is just a misconception that we have. Here I'm talking about ignorance regarding the ultimate, which is emptiness, okay? Making everything solid, seeing the snake when it's a rope, okay? The secondary ignorance is the ignorance about cause and effect. And to some extent, that's innate with us, but then that one we can definitely learn by wrong philosophical schools. I mean, the first one we can learn by wrong philosophical schools, too. There's two levels for both of them, both what they call the artificial, which is what you learn from wrong philosophy, and then the innate, which is the tendency in the mind, kind of from birth to have wrong conceptions.
No.
Okay. Okay, so there's two levels of each. Well, let's stay with the ignorance. Those two kinds of ignorance. Ignorance regarding the ultimate, ignorance regarding the relative. Ignorance regarding the ultimate, okay, is making everything concrete, independently existent, solid, existing out there, independent, in and of itself, okay, without depending on parts and causes and labels. Okay. Ignorance regarding the relative is not having understanding of cause and effect, completely denying the existence of cause and effect, actions and their results. Okay? And both of these are inborn. Nobody teaches us. That's one level. But then there's another level on which we do learn them through our society, because our society does teach us certain things, or wrong philosophical systems. They teach us all sorts of stuff. Yeah? And then you start following a wrong philosophical system and you put your mind into, you know, any kind of weird state and then you live according to that.
Yeah? So, put together.
Well, I think you're right. Our mind is quite unreliable. Okay? And the thing is that within our mind, there's many different kinds of mental factors that can arise or be manifest, you know, actively manifest in our mind at different times. And some of these are very contradictory towards each other. Yeah? So we might at one moment have a wrong conception, there's no cause and effect, and then later we might have the mental factor of wisdom coming up and saying, oh gee, I think there is cause and effect. You know? And at one time, we might have self-respect and say, no, I'm not going to act negatively because, you know, I have human dignity and this is, you know, I'm not going to undercut that. And at another time, we may completely throw our self-respect out the window and just, you know, do anything we want to. So we have all these different parts, many of which are opposing to each other, and then they come up at different times. And so what we're trying to do in the Dharma practice is learn to identify them. Yeah, so that when different thoughts and feelings come up in the mind, we're able to identify, oh, that's consideration for others, or oh, that's lack of consideration for others, or oh, that's mindfulness, and oh, that's confidence, and oh, that That is anger. You know, that's grudge holding. And so, you know, learning to identify what the different thoughts and feelings we have are. And so similar with the misconceptions, because basically, you know, all these thoughts and feelings are all, they're all intertwined with misconceptions. And so that's why it's really important to listen to teachings, to think about them, and then to meditate on them, because that gives us some kind of guideline on how to evaluate the quality of our different thoughts. So instead of just having this blanket thing of, I think it, therefore it's true, beginning to question and evaluate, well, what is true and what isn't true?
True being what's reality is something.
Yeah, yeah. I, for example, today I was talking with somebody, and, you know, and she was saying that whenever she does the four immeasurables, she tries to include George Bush, because she really feels that, you know, somehow he's trying to do his best, but, you know, because we were talking about the environmental conference coming up and everything. He's trying to do his best, but he's somehow obscured. And so I said, well, yeah, I think Saddam Hussein, you know, from his point of view, he was trying to do what he thought was right. You know, he thought that what he was doing was right, and it was fitting, and it was proper. And so he was acting with that, what he considered to be a good motivation. And so she said, yeah, you know, I mean, it's just amazing how people can think they're right when they're really, you know, out of sight. And I replied, yeah, but when we're right, we're really right, aren't we? You know, we're it's different, isn't it? We're definitely right. Yeah. No other way to look at it. Yeah? So what the Dharma is doing is bringing a little bit of doubt into that. Well, instead of assuming that I think it, therefore it's right, let's, you know, not take my own thoughts and feelings so seriously. Yeah? But let's step back and let's start to look at them and, well, is that right or not? Yeah? And am I acting properly or could it be improved? Or, you know, is this really honest relationship or am I, you know, am I joking with myself and the other person? Yeah? So it's beginning to step back and asking these questions to ourselves. Yeah? And we may not get instant answers. Yeah? Because sometimes it's really, really hard to tell. Yeah? We can't, you know, we don't know. We can't evaluate our own self. Yeah? And so I think, again, this is where the value of continual practice and meditation over a period of time helps. Because by doing this for a long time, you begin to get more familiar with what's going on and things become clearer. And so I've often had the experience that, like, while something's happening or right after it happens, I can't tell, you know, was that anger or was I just really being practical? You know, I can't tell. But then maybe a few months later when there's more space in my mind, oh, that was anger, wasn't it? Yeah. Or it might be later I decide, oh, no, actually it was okay what I was doing. And so sometimes you can't really tell at the time because our mind's too muddy or we're too involved in the situation so it's too difficult to really analyze. So again, if we have this kind of practice over a period of time, that gives us the time to begin to look back on things and learn. So I think we have to go in with the attitude of, yes, I am going to make mistakes, but there's no other way to do it. Yeah? And so this mind that says I have to have everything clean and concise and in its proper box from the beginning, I have to be able to do everything perfect as soon as I heard it. Yeah? That mind, you know. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I should be enlightened tomorrow. That thought, don't bother to recycle. That one just goes in the garbage bin. Okay? Yeah? That kind of expectation.
Question, however, about that. I mean, I can understand the concept. Things are pretty strong.
Yeah. that's why again and again and again, understanding. I think one thing is again and again, you know, analyzing and just, you know, going through that $100 bill. And yes, all it is just ink and paper. That's all. There's nothing else in there. Yeah. And then, like she said, it becomes valuable simply by the power of our mind. Because aside from the power of our mind, there is no value in that. You know, if you gave that to somebody who was not from our culture, or, you know, who was from a culture where they didn't use paper, you know, they would probably use it to light a fire. Yeah? Why? Because there is no inherent value inside of that thing. It's completely by the power of our concept. Huh?
What if I was meditating? I know that the $100 is void of inherent existence, but I know that it has. But I'm not attached to the paper. I'm attached to what I can get with the paper.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Then that in that thing, we're you know seeing not only the money as inherently existent, but also the thing that we want. You know, it's like I want this glass. This real, beautiful, fantastic crystal glass. Yeah? And again, you know, the glass is, from its own side, it doesn't exist as a glass. It doesn't exist as valuable. It doesn't exist as beautiful. You know? All those things, it exists as simply by the power of our mind, putting that concept on it. Yeah? So it's like, you know, when you were saying that, and you meditate, it's like, when's the food coming? Yeah, I mean, it gets real big. That's real. It's definitely inherent existence. But if you stop and look at it and you step, you know, back, well, what is that food? Yeah? Well, basically, it's manure and it's water. You know, it's like nitrogen and carbon and oxygen, you know. It's like, what's the big deal about? Yeah? You do need it to live. Relatively, you need it to live. Yeah. But that's the idea of superimposing. Okay, you could say, I need it to live, or you could say, I need it to live. You know, no big difference there. Okay? For me. And also, making it solid out there. Yeah, getting away from that as well.